Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, June 6th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Heroin Whispers Lies, Former Addicts Recall Ease of Falling Under Spell of Drug. This is an article written by Justin Kahn, Herald and Review staff writer. The scars on Lori Caldwell's arms are still there, though they've begun to lighten. Caldwell wishes she could say the same for her mental and emotional scars. Caldwell's voice becomes a whisper as she tries to talk through her tears while recounting her plunge into addictions to heroin and crack cocaine. Caldwell has trouble remembering little details like where she was in her story, what floor she's on, and when appointments are. But all the things she'd like to forget, getting arrested in the bathroom at McDonald's, not being there for her mom while she was dying of breast cancer, losing custody of her children, and missing out on their childhoods, play over and over in her head. Caldwell knows she'll never be the same. A hard decade plus of heavy drug use took its toll, and even though she's been clean for more than 5 years, she's far from healed. I'm still trying to dig out, Caldwell said. The drugs, they grabbed a hold of me and wouldn't let go. I'm still trying to see the light. Eric Buntain, Troy Pulliam, and Caldwell have been through Heritage Behavioral Health Center's drug rehabilitation program after becoming addicted to heroin. All three are currently clean, but know just one little stumble, one moment of giving in, would thrust them back into a life they've tried desperately to dig their way out of. The following are the stories of their road to addiction and recovery. Eric Buntain, 37, Paris. Buntain had a normal upbringing. He played sports, did motocross, and had the best mother and the best father. Neither of his parents used drugs, nor did his older brother. But some high schoolers the same age as his older brother did like to party. At 13, he started drinking and smoking marijuana as a way to get in good with an older crowd. By 18, Buntain had progressed to cocaine. Just a month after his first child was born, he went to prison for possession of cocaine. Buntain was out in a year, and soon after his second child was born. It was at that time he and his girlfriend began using a relative's fentanyl patches. When the patches ran out, he tried heroin. I loved it instantly, Buntain said. I got some and brought it home for my girlfriend to try. It ended up wrecking her life, too. Buntain and his girlfriend started out snorting it, but advanced to intravenous use. Buntain, who was 21 at the time, said within 90 days he knew he was addicted, but didn't care. To me, it was normal, he said. I liked that life. What began as a $50 a week habit became $50 a day, and then $100 a day. Buntain would travel to Champaign and Decatur to find the drug, going through several dealers. I could always find somebody, Buntain said. I never had one time where I came home empty-handed, not once. Buntain eventually concluded he didn't like that life anymore. By then, though, it was too late. That great feeling you get at first from doing it, that comfort, it goes away so quickly, Buntain said. Before you know it, you're only feeling that for a minute or two. Then it's just about maintaining, and it's so hard to keep going. It's awful, and it becomes awful pretty quickly. You're just using it because of fear of getting sick. Finding money to buy the drug became more and more difficult, but that didn't stop Buntain from trying. He sold his car, despite it being his main source of transportation, to get the heroin. He got jobs, but couldn't keep them. I'd lose them either for having to go get heroin or because I was sick from not having it, Buntain said. It turned me into a liar and a thief. It ate up my life and my family. I'd sell drugs, steal, do whatever I could until I ended up back in prison. Buntain went back to prison 4 more times. Each time, Buntain would be forced to go through withdrawals cold turkey. That ain't no fun, Buntain said. For some people, that will stop them from using again, but not me. Even a 2.5-year prison term didn't stop him. Every time I got out, I'd go a little while without using, but I'd always go back. After Buntain's final prison term, he entered into a work release program in Decatur. He stayed clean for a few months before eventually falling back into addiction. But this time was different. Something clicked and said, "This stuff isn't cool anymore, man," Buntain said. "I had this long prison record and no life. The people I thought were dorks in high school had good jobs and were driving nice cars, living a good life." Buntain ended up checking himself into Heritage's detox program and getting on methadone 4 years ago. He hasn't used since. "Methadone gets a bad rap, but if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be sitting here right now," Buntain said. "There's more to it than methadone. You have to be ready, and I was, but you also have to change your whole life, the way you look at it, and the people you hang around. Some people need methadone. You don't get high on it, and since I've been on it, I don't have cravings. It's kept a needle out of my arm and kept me from committing crimes, and it keeps me with my children. I don't plan on being on it forever, but I'm not going to stop until I know for sure I'm strong enough." Buntain's oldest daughter is now 16. His other two are 15 and 10. "My relationship is great with my kids. When you start doing good, good happens," Buntain said. "My kids' mom and I are separated. She's still doing it, and she has no contact with them. I just thank God for my family. It's no telling what would have happened without them. I've always wanted to be a good father. I started thinking when I grew up, I had a dad who was there for me. How can I let these kids grow up with no dad?" Buntain, who now works on a farm outside Casey, said he's also made an effort to fix his relationship with his parents. "I've done everything I can to make up with them," Buntain said. "It's taken a lot because I put them through a lot of stuff. I promised my mother, 'You'll never be in an old folks' home. I'll take care of you the rest of your life.' Because she always stuck by me. There were times they wouldn't help me, tough love, but they never gave up." Troy Pulliam, 39, Decatur. Pulliam's parents divorced when he was young, and he was raised by his father, a drug dealer and addict. But Pulliam described his childhood as happy, and he was an athlete in high school. Pulliam began smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol late in high school, then began using cocaine and later crack. He described himself as more of a binge user of crack than an addict. In his early 30s, Pulliam was working maintenance for an apartment complex. He had a girlfriend and they were raising two children, but stress from money problems led to relationship difficulties. He was at his grandmother's house one day talking to a family member about his problems and was offered heroin. "I tried it and was instantly hooked," Pulliam said. "It made everything going on, the stress and the pain, melt away. That's the initial lie heroin tells you." Pulliam, unlike most heroin addicts, never progressed to shooting up, but that didn't keep him from getting addicted. "I loved how it kind of just made everything okay," Pulliam said. "I wasn't worried about those things anymore. I was hooked psychologically right away, and after a couple days my body was addicted and I had to have it." Soon, Pulliam was hiding use from his girlfriend, dipping into the checking account, and finally, stealing from his employer. "I woke up at one point after a couple of days without having it, and I felt so bad. They say it's flu-like symptoms, but that's really a severe flu," Pulliam said. "That's when it wasn't fun anymore. The fear of the withdrawal is so strong, it drove me to do anything." Pulliam's girlfriend eventually found out, and then he was caught stealing from his employer. His girlfriend left him, and he went to jail. After being released, he went to Heritage, cleaned up, and got back with his girlfriend. They married, Pulliam found a job, and later came another baby. "When I got out of jail and treatment, I wanted it. I didn't want to do drugs anymore," Pulliam said. "Things were good." "That changed 2 years ago. While leading a ministry at a church and studying to be a pastor, Pulliam smoked crack, then started doing heroin again. I get these thoughts in my head that I can do it one time, that I can put this worldly stuff down, take a break, and get high, Pulliam said. I ended up addicted to heroin again and stealing from my employer again. My wife divorced me, and I ended up homeless. Pulliam was caught stealing, and with a prior, he was facing 4 years in prison, but he was offered drug court and took it. My thought process at the time was, I'm going to take this so I can stay out of prison, Pulliam said, but it ended up changing my life completely. This time, Pulliam said, he embraced recovery fully. He graduated from drug court and is now a drug court recovery specialist at Heritage. I've made it my job to live recovery and help others with recovery, Pulliam said. Before, I thought one day I wouldn't need it. But if I want to stay clean, I need to stay in recovery. Pulliam also got his wife and children back. They remarried last February. She has some recovery herself from the pain I've caused her, and there are trust issues. She keeps me on a tight leash, but I accept that. That's totally fine, and I understand, and it will lessen someday. It already has, gradually. She's a good woman, and she recognizes change is possible. Lori Caldwell, 45, Decatur. Caldwell grew up around marijuana use by her parents and started smoking pot herself in high school. She said as a child she felt depressed but went untreated. I liked feeling different than the way I felt inside, but I didn't know what it was, Caldwell said. I thought I needed to do something in order to have fun or function. At 18, she began using cocaine. Then in her 20s, met her husband and began smoking crack, but on a recreational basis. They had good jobs and eventually a daughter came along, but they would use on the weekends. My thought process was, I'm working, I deserve this, Caldwell said. It was like a treat. I did what I had and that was it. Eventually, Caldwell and her husband split up, and Caldwell was introduced to heroin at a party. Later, she met a new boyfriend with whom she had a second child, and the couple started shooting heroin together. Caldwell settled into a routine, start with crack, then finish with heroin to come down. As her use grew, she lost her job and her boyfriend went to jail. Caldwell was able to draw unemployment for a while, but when that dried up, she sunk to whatever means she could to procure the drugs, often taking advantage of a friend. Caldwell began developing needle marks all over her arms and picking at the scabs. A representative from the police department saw the marks, and Caldwell lost custody of her oldest daughter. I was putting makeup on them, but it was the wrong color, Caldwell said. I thought I was covering them up, but they were identified as track marks, and they took her. Caldwell had chances to regain custody, but she couldn't get clean. That became a theme in Caldwell's life, and soon she'd lost custody of both children, both of whom had witnessed her drug use. She'd go long periods without seeing them. I did drugs so I didn't have to think about it, Caldwell said. The only time I would think about it was when the drugs ran out. Then it sneaks up on you, and the guilt, it's 10 times more than you can imagine. Caldwell can talk about most of the things she did during her days as an addict with little emotion, but when it comes to her children, the tears flow uncontrollably. You play in your head everything they saw and everything you did, and you think, I'm going to call them right now and apologize, Caldwell said. A couple times I did, but at some point you think, do they think I'm sincere? Caldwell tried rehab when her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, but went back to using the night she got out. Eventually, her mom died from cancer. Caldwell tried to be there for her, but couldn't stay away from drugs long enough. Another raw nerve for Caldwell. I thought, okay, I can go over there and hang out, but then I would think, how am I going to do my heroin, Caldwell said. I thought it would be worse on her if I was there, and she saw me in the state I was in, so I never went over there. I'll regret that for the rest of my life. At that point, family members urged Caldwell to get clean. Her mom even left a caveat in her will that if Caldwell got clean, she would get a portion of her will, but Caldwell couldn't do it. Caldwell finally had to get clean after getting arrested at McDonald's. She dropped her heroin paraphernalia at the counter but didn't realize it. She went into the bathroom to smoke crack and was surprised to hear the police knocking on the bathroom door. Caldwell was arrested with crack and charged with a felony. That still didn't stop Caldwell, who was using more than $300 a day in crack and heroin. She started having paranoid thoughts and hearing voices. "It would seem so real, but I was going crazy," Caldwell said. "I did so much, I'm surprised I'm alive." Most addicts have a story of a last straw or incident that leads them to recovery, some moment of clarity. Caldwell didn't. She was gradually drawn to recovery, but she did finally check herself into Heritage. She got on an antidepressant and methadone and now has been clean for nearly 6 years. She knows she's done permanent damage, but also knows she has plenty of time left to live and repair her relationships with her daughters. One is 20 and the other is 14, as long as she stays clean. "It's a struggle. It's still in me and it never goes away," Caldwell said. "But I got a job now and I'm in my kids' lives. I try to focus on that. I'm good with my youngest daughter. We're close and she wants to get into counseling. But I still haven't patched things up with my oldest daughter. She's distant. She's doing really good. She's in nursing school, but it's awkward. We don't know what to say to each other, and I don't know how to fix it. I'm like a stranger to her. But I'm working on it and talking about it in group. I'd like for her to come and talk, but I don't want to ask her and have her say no. But at least she comes and sees me." And also by Justin Kahn from Decatur. "Growth in heroin use tracked to pain med crackdown." When the U.S. government began cracking down on prescription pain medicine use in 2009-2010, it had no idea what the side effects would be. Since that decision, according to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the number of heroin users has tripled. Estimates on current users ranges from 600,000 to more than 1 million in the United States. The government meant well, but had no real plan of action for what to do about all these people hooked on prescription pain medicine, said Michael Reeves, HSHS St. Mary's behavioral health counselor. The crackdown on prescription opioids drove up the price for popular drugs such as OxyContin and Percocet. Addicts found an alternative in the cheap, potent heroin that was flooding the streets from Mexico. According to the American Society of Addiction Medicine, 4 in 5 new heroin users started out misusing prescription painkillers. "That's astonishing," Reeves said. "Their prescription runs out, then it's wow, what now? They're already addicted." Reeves said that's why the use of heroin is suddenly spreading outside the city. Oxycodone, after knee surgery, is a powerful medicine. Or you have the 40-year-old guy with some back pain taking Vicodin daily, Reeves said. If you take it for 3 or 4 months, then you stop, you're sick. Suddenly it's harder for that 40-year-old guy to get his medicine. He's going to know somebody who knows somebody that brings him this little bag over, and with this new, more pure form of heroin, you don't have to shoot it, so that stigma is gone. People are smoking and sniffing it. They do a line in the morning, and they're good to go for 6 to 8 hours. Then they're hooked on it. Vail said no heroin user plans on becoming a junkie, but it can happen easily. He said physicians deserve some of the blame. "They are as much a part of the epidemic as the actual dealers themselves," Vail said. "They wrote never-ending scripts, and now it's a level 1 epidemic, and there are still physicians not paying attention to it." Not everyone agrees that the crackdown on opioids is causing the rise in heroin use. Bruce Engelman, Heritage Behavioral Health Center Division Manager for Addictions and Criminal Justice Services, said he's worried the crackdown is taking the medicine out of the hands of those using it responsibly. "The vast majority of people getting prescribed opioids use them correctly," Engelman said. "We need to tighten it up, but most people take it right. They're not getting high, they're just able to function. My fear is the overreaction that there are going to be a lot of people who need this drug and now they won't be able to get it. Engelman said he attributes the rise to more social acceptance. It's cool, it's there, and it's cheap, Engelman said. It's just out there, and everyone knows someone who's doing it. And because more people are doing it, it's not as taboo as it once was. And from the local page, Council to Assess Video Gambling by Allison Petty from Decatur. The Decatur City Council will discuss the state of video gambling in Decatur during a study session tonight. Several council members have said they want to discuss the topic. City staff will make an informational presentation, but not offer any recommendations, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus said on Friday. We'll present some data as to what exists in our community, he said. There will be dollar figures. There will also be information about how many establishments and other data like that. In other business, the council will consider a slate of measures related to sewer improvements. They include a $396,130 contract with Entler Excavating Company for miscellaneous sewer improvements, which is an annual project, an agreement not to exceed $50,000 with Bainbridge, Gee, Malansky & Associates to improve the Shore Oak and Green Oak pump stations, a professional services agreement not to exceed $30,000 with Bainbridge, Gee, Malansky & Associates to help with sanitary sewer improvements that are required by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, an agreement to borrow roughly $15.3 million from the Illinois Water Pollution Control Loan Program at an interest rate of 1.86% to repair the 7th Ward sewer, and an agreement with Bainbridge, Gee, Malansky & Associates to provide engineering and inspection services for the 7th Ward repairs at a cost not to exceed $944,000. The City Council approved increases to sanitary sewer fees in 2011 and created a new stormwater utility in 2014. Both were meant to pay specifically for repairs to the city's aging sewer infrastructure, and Tyus said the city is moving forward with the critical work that it pledged to provide. If you have failing sewers, you don't really want to think about that, what that could mean for people, he said. It could mean overflow. It could create safety issues. It could create other various issues that we don't even really want to think about happening. Improved sewer systems could also be good for redevelopment, Tyus said. One of the things developers look for is quality infrastructure, he said. If you don't have it, it makes it hard to bring them to your community. And the sidebar says, if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. Monday in the council chambers, third floor, Decatur Civic Center at 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. From Moequa, Ryan Voiles writes, Powwow marks start of summer for Moequa. The children of Moequa count down to the end of the school year for more reasons than just the start of summer. The first full weekend of June provides them a chance to enjoy their own carnival right around the corner from their homes, as it marks the annual Moequa Powwow Days, a four-day festival of carnival rides, a parade, a 5K run walk, and various entertainers taking the stage at the town's Central Park. The kids get excited. They know that once school is out, the powwow is just around the corner, said Laura Seitz, a member of the powwow committee. Sunday was the close of the event and featured a demonstration by Forsyth-based Sharps Taekwondo and a performance by the Greater Decatur Chorale. For those younger attendees, Sunday offered a chance to go on an unlimited number of rides with a wristband, and dozens of children made a dash toward the giant slide. Sunday's sunshine provided a nice reprieve from Saturday when heavy rainfall created a muddy park and forced the cancellation of the afternoon car show. Despite the rain, Saturday morning's parade still went on, and Seitz said the children made the most of it. The kids loved it. They were jumping in the puddles and splashing water around, she said. Attendance numbers were unavailable Sunday afternoon, but officials said they have had upwards of 300 people enjoying the powwow each day. Opposite of the carnival rides were rows of local vendors where attendees could get anything from Thai food to hand-cranked ice cream. Many of the booths were operated by local organizations such as the Methodist Church, and committee member Cinda Villanueva said the festival is a vital time for many of these groups to do their fundraising. "For a lot of our local organizations, this is their main moneymaker for the year," she said. "This is the only time they can come out and do things like this." This year marked the 37th anniversary of the powwow, according to organizers, which has changed much since it first began as a downtown street festival. Regardless of the changes, though, it remains a chance for families to come together and explore all the community has to offer, said Donna Moore, secretary of the Moequa Historical Society. "People come home. They plan their vacations around this," she said. "It's a family-friendly event that's nice for people to come home and enjoy." And from Decatur, Huey Freeman writes, "Decatur man confesses to sex abuse of girl." A 34-year-old Decatur man is being held in jail on a $100,000 bond after he admitted to police that he committed sex acts with a young girl, which reportedly began when she was about 8 years old. The victim told a forensic interviewer at the Child First Center that James A. Wills, Jr. sexually abused her about 3 times each week when the incidents began several years ago. He abused her in several different ways and directed her to commit sex acts with him. In a recent incident, he tried to rape her, which caused her pain, the victim told the interviewer, according to a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Todd Kester. Wills acknowledged that he did engage in sexual contact with the victim when asked about this and other allegations. During an interview at police headquarters, Wills, 34, said he committed various sexual acts approximately 10 to 15 times with the victim. He told police that he repeatedly committed specific sex acts on the young girl and had her commit sex acts with him. He said the sexual encounters increased in frequency from the first time he initiated them several years ago. James stated that he decided to come to the police department to confess to these acts because he wants counseling, Kester wrote in his statement. Wills was arrested around 10 p.m. Thursday and booked into the Macon County Jail. He is being held on preliminary felony charges of predatory criminal sexual assault and criminal sexual assault, pending his arraignment by Friday in circuit court. And the local briefs include Decatur, pedestrian hit by van. At 11:18 p.m. Saturday, the Decatur Police Department responded to a reported traffic crash at Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, just north of East Wood Street. Officers found a 35-year-old Decatur man who had been struck by a van that was driven by a 35-year-old Decatur woman. According to police, the pedestrian suffered life-threatening injuries and was transported to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield for advanced treatment of his injuries. Preliminary investigation indicated that the driver of the van was traveling north on MLK in the left lane when the westbound pedestrian walked into the path of the van. The driver of the van could not avoid striking the pedestrian. The driver of the van was not impaired. It is unknown if the pedestrian was impaired. The crash is being investigated by the Fatal Accident Investigation Team. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, June 6th, 2016. Stay tuned.